Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories. Hello, this is Susan Montanaro of Dreams and Detours. Today, I have the pleasure of having Jessica Simpson on the show. She is a people and culture strategist, a leadership coach, a people experience expert. And really what she does is she helps CEOs of high growth brands align culture with strategy so they can run their businesses at scale. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So you and I are new friends this year and professional connection this year. What is your background in terms of how long have you been doing this strategy work and how long have you been a people expert in the corporate space?
So I actually got my start in the military in the mid-90s. I discovered what back then was called personnel. And I think very early on took a real interest in human dynamics at work and the way what we experience outside of work shapes how teams and leaders function together.
Wow.
And that led me to a corporate career. It's starting in the early 2000s. So it's been, you know, roughly 20 years.
That's fantastic.
Kind of playing in the people and culture space.
And you're right. We used to call it personnel and then it was human resources. It's continued to morph into many things. And I think I really love that it has now changed and shifting into the people experience.
Because absolutely.
That's what we are. And so I'm fascinated by your experience and your leadership expertise. I think it's really very, very cool. And it's been a teaching moment for me as well. So you took this leap more recently into more of a solopreneur, independent work dynamic. And I'm wondering, this is just like something that's been going on more and more, which is really cool in today's day. People are really leaping into doing their own thing and kind of crafting and shaping their own businesses. So I'd love to know what led you there and what that looks like for you and how long you've been doing that.
Yeah, it started about 5 or 6 years ago as a small side project. During the time that I was in coaching school, I picked up a couple clients on the side on top of leading HR and learning and development for a high growth brand I was working for at the time. And it was really just through connections of people that I knew at work. They knew folks in another company or somebody on the board, you know, said, hey, we've got someone that we'd like to have a coach for. And just through the leaders that I worked with every day, they introduced me to people. And it was really just to practice and to build my credentials. And it was always in the back of my mind as something that I might someday turn into a full-time venture, but I was pretty busy, you know, with my corporate gig.
Sure.
And so it wasn't until about a year and a half ago that I decided to make the leap and do it full-time.
That's great. Yeah, I know most of us are side hustling or learning and sort of figuring out, taking steps towards something bigger that we can then cultivate into that full-time role. So just to sort of kind of backtrack a little bit and get a sense of when you started this career off, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, did you have plans or did you see it morphing into what you currently do now? Is that always the dream and the direction that you had planned to go into and toward?
Not even a little bit.
Okay.
most of the things that happened over the course of my career, the moves that I made, most of them were completely unforeseen by me. I think in the beginning, you know, I just wanted to learn and grow. And quite honestly, my career was a source of stability. I, you know, grew up in a home where things were fairly unstable and where money was, you know, money was a struggle. And so I threw myself kind of headfirst into my career as a source of stability without really thinking or looking kind of long-term down the road about what I wanted it to become. Mm-hmm. I was just moving.
Yes.
And a lot of my, you know, in hindsight, I can see that a lot of my moves weren't actually things that I had a plan around. It was more just kind of following what I thought the right path was.
Right. No, I can totally relate to that. It sometimes becomes, or you get to a point where you feel like it's choosing you, or you're just following these dots and creating a line, whatever shape that is, as you move forward. So backtracking, where did you grow up?
I grew up actually, interesting story. I grew up about 50% in rural central Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and the other 50% in Southern California. Okay. And that came to be as the result of a custody agreement. Parents split when I was four, and one lived in Pennsylvania and one lived in Southern California. And their custody agreement was that they each got the kids a year at a time. So my sister and I would spend our even school years in rural central Pennsylvania, agricultural community, Amish, Mennonite, dairy farms, really small town. And then at the end of that school year, jump on a plane, fly to Southern California, and spend the next year with our mom.
Okay. So aside from anything that you would bear witness to from a financial stability standpoint, I imagine that movement back and forth also sort of created this, kind of uprooted you in a way, and kind of disrupted what was ongoing ground or some sense of permanency in that way. That's a fascinating dynamic. I mean, I know for me, I moved like over a dozen times with my family. So I think that there's no real right recipe or rhythm there. It just, when that happens, kind of gears you and prepares you for life in such a different way than if you had one central location. And were your earlier influencers or what influenced you as a kid growing up in terms of your direction or the things you liked and enjoyed?
You know, I think I've always been, even as a child, it got me into trouble, actually. I've always been intensely curious. And so even as a child, I loved reading and I loved books and documentaries, like really nerdy stuff, you know, for for someone of that age. And I think that was a source of inspiration and discovery that expanded my view of what was possible or, you know, what existed in the world, like far beyond what I might have experienced in family or home life.
Right. No, I love that level of curiosity because, you know, as I have put this platform together and in my own space, I'm constantly saying we find ourselves in other people's stories. And so we, you know, that curiosity is actually really cool, nerdy or cool, because I think that it does. It kind of helps us understand what's going on in the world outside of the bubble we might be existing in. And that certainly gave that to you, especially if you're living in rural PA, where there's some limitation as to how many people you might come in contact with, or, you know, some of the expanded cultural opportunities that exist in urban environments, let's say. That certainly is helpful to be able to grab onto any sort of content that provides it. So now you are working in this field and you've gone out on your own. you have these early moments that are helping to shape you. Some of it's rooted in some uncertainty, other parts of it, like the curious parts that you are developing yourself and being able to really connect the human dots, which I would imagine is a core factor in the work that you do today and the success that you see, because you understand how those components and that strategy works. Tell me a little bit about the difference that you're finding for yourself in the workplace, creating it your own version of it and having your own structure versus the one that you were a part of when you were on a team working for a corporate environment.
That's a great question. So much of the work I do today on my own is very similar to the type of work or the scope of work that, you know, that I was engaged in my internal roles. I think, you know, one of the biggest differences is just that as an entrepreneur, you're often on your own. So whereas before in a lot of the bigger companies, I spent time at Apple and at Panera, you know, really large, very well-resourced organizations where I had a massive internal network of subject matter experts to tap into when I needed help with something. And as an entrepreneur, it's up to you, right? So I think that's been one of the biggest adjustments. The type and scope of work is probably still fairly similar. Kind of looking at the people implications of a company's growth and figuring out how to take what they want to do at an organizational level, translate it to the individual level, and put the people and culture strategy in place to support that. But what's very different is the independence, the freedom, and there's in many ways a lack of constraint in that whatever I can imagine, I can incorporate into a proposal or have a conversation with a client about. So I feel like I have a lot more freedom now, and that there's a greater creativity in my ideas that's been flowing over the last couple of years.
Okay. So would you say that previously there you were feeling far more confined in the role that you were in and you didn't have that flexibility? Is it due to the size and scale of the organizations that you worked for? So were there limitations, or were there just so many people, like too many cooks in the kitchen making decisions?
I think it would probably be a combination of factors depending on where I was at. And some of those factors even had to do with me and where I was at the time as an individual. But I think, you know, a lot of times when you're in an internal role, the balance of honoring the direction that your organization is heading and trying to support those strategic initiatives and doing it with the time and budget constraints and with, you know, the demands of back-to-back meetings all day and, you know, just the normal, like everyday corporate life. I sometimes was at capacity and just didn't have the space or freedom to think as creatively as I do now, mm-hmm. or to invest as much ideation time into things. And I'm finding that the clients that I work with now are really interested in co-creating and in collaborating and ideating together. So I've just been fortunate that I have a little more space to do that now.
Yeah, no, I would imagine if you can focus on that bigger part of the puzzle and being able to bring to the table, because you have the time now to put together a variety of ideas and options in order for a client to evaluate or to collaborate with you, that must feel like you're in a more artistic space almost, and as opposed to one that's very structured and very, well, I don't want to use the word rules necessarily, but has such tighter boundaries as you were sort of describing. And so the thing is, many people find and feel that exact way, that in the more corporate structure, while there are certainly resources and there are great people to tap into and tools to be utilized. People live in the frustrated state and sort of stick around. Maybe they get a promotion, or maybe they, you know, shift over into another sector of the people experience in HR, you know, departments, just to sort of round out or to start honing in on the parts of the work that they really enjoy doing. But you took a leap out. So I guess I'm just always fascinated with and absolutely admire those who decide to make that transition and leap out. Were there other parts of the corporate space that were no longer working for you? Or, you know, how do you just make that step and say, okay, flying without a net now, going to just do it? I mean, what else was, I guess, on the table for you to say that I can't shape it inside, you know, the system, so I'm going to create it outside entirely on my own?
Yeah, I think it came about, you know, if I'm perfectly candid and vulnerable about it, it came about almost out of necessity. And it's one of those things that in retrospect, it's so much clearer to me than it was at the time. But in hindsight, I realized that I had a growing discontent kind of bubbling under the surface with my work. And where I, you know, was working for phenomenal organizations with incredibly talented teams and people that I loved being around every day. But I wasn't getting the same fulfillment and joy from my work that I did in my early career. And I think a lot of that has to do with I wasn't, you know, learning and growing in the way that I wanted to. And, you know, honestly, there was also a part of me that was on a personal journey through my meditation practice and through studying Buddhism that I was noticing an evolution in my own priorities and how I wanted to show up in this world. Mm-hmm. And it all kind of came to a head without me even realizing how bad it had gotten, you know, at a doctor's appointment one day, where I'd done some routine tests and was struggling with a few kind of chronic nagging things. And when my provider came back in, she kind of shared my lab results and report with me and said, you know, it appears you are suffering from chronic stress and you are heading toward burnout. And I don't know which, you know, chronic stress induced disease you're going to develop, but within the next couple of years, you are headed, you know, down the path of a chronic stress induced disease.
Did that surprise you?
It did. You know, she'd been pointing out to me some of the leading indicators for a couple of years of things that weren't trending how she wanted them to. And I kept telling her, I have a really high stress tolerance. I'm perfectly fine. I was somewhat, you know, like I said, somewhat feeling kind of unfulfilled and wondering about what was next for me at work. And I'd noticed, you know, I'd started to feel tired more, or I was grouchy more often, or I didn't have the energy and excitement for things that I typically had, but I thought I was doing fine overall.
Right.
And it wasn't until she laid, you know, lab reports out in front of me and pointed to a number of things and kind of pointed to the trend over the last couple of years and said, here's where this leads. You know, it leads to, if you're lucky, chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or, you know, some other chronic, you know, stress-induced illness, you know, on the worst end of the spectrum, this leads to cancer. And she actually went as far as to say, I don't want you to go back to work today.
Yeah.
I want you to take a leave and take some time off and figure out, you know, why it is you keep going back to something that is clearly not healthy for you. And I want you to figure out what else you can do because your job isn't worth your health.
And that's scary. Let's face it, not just the diagnosis or the potential diagnosis that awaits us when we hear results and information of this, but it's scary because you're in a job. Yes, there's a lot of pressure and demand, but you're excelling, you're doing a great job. It sounds like you were fitting in and doing your job well. You're like, oh my gosh, I can't go back to my job because it's actually hurting me. Nothing to really laugh at. More, it's startling that this could be killing you, essentially. And so that had to have come, you know, as sort of a blow in some ways, especially if you had been ignoring some of the earlier warnings or signs. So you took that leave, and I imagine did a little inward thinking or some time. Mm-hmm. How much longer were you in your role for before you started to make a decision then that going out on your own would be ideal?
Less than a year.
Okay.
Less than a year. Yeah. You know, like many of us at that mid-career stage, you know, our careers are our livelihood. And so there was definitely a significant amount of fear around what will I do? You know, what's next? I couldn't see. I knew the path I was on was no longer sustainable, but I couldn't see what was next.
Right.
And it was through meditation and through reading and through journaling. And as you pointed out, like self-reflection. That I just got to a point where I was looking at how I felt when I went to work every day, as well as, honestly, the quality of my work. I knew I wasn't doing my best work anymore. And, you know, going back to work after a leave, I noticed how significantly different I felt when I was away from my job for the time I was off. Mm-hmm. And when I went back, and if I, you know, had any doubt left about whether or not I needed to step away for a while and take care of myself and figure out what was next, it was the contrast between having the time off and going back, how I felt, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, that made it painfully clear to me that the path that I'd been on for the last 20 years was no longer my path.
Right. And it's fine. And like you said, you've worked with great professionals at great organizations. And when we realize that we are the problem, or it is our challenge and it is for us to make that decision, that's really all it becomes. And yes, quite scary. I think you and I share that similar pathway of realizing that when we don't belong somewhere any longer and we need to recreate what that means for us, to then go out and put forth the great work and take all that we know to be true and right and all that we can contribute in our work and to do that in a whole new way. And so you've been able to build that back. And I think that's exciting. And I think that's exactly the kind of information listeners, you know, want to grab onto and want to understand. I think that, and I'm sure that you've found this in your own conversations with others, you know, there are people who are holding on very tight. And I don't know about you, but ever since I myself have been able to see the contrast of what works where I work well and where I don't, I almost see it a little bit for others sometimes. I can identify it in other people. And you start to just be that much more aware of people that are, you know, kind of burning out before your own eyes.
Suffering.
Absolutely.
I've noticed, you know, after getting present to my own suffering, I see that pain in so many other, and maybe it's just because this is, you know, the types of folks that I work with, but so many mid-career folks in that, you know, mid 40s to 50s ish age range that are a couple of decades in and in roles of significant responsibility that provide for them very well. And I am noticing just a tremendous amount of suffering where folks have worked their entire lives for something and get to what was supposed to be the pinnacle. Mm-hmm. And look around and ask themselves, is this all there is? Right. Is this what I worked all those years for? And why is it that this doesn't fulfill me anymore, or this doesn't have meaning anymore? Or why is it that as I'm growing and evolving as an individual,
It's almost like, why do I feel so bad, right?
Yes.
Yeah, why do I feel so bad?
Absolutely. I see that. I see that a lot. And I think that, you know, it's maybe partly a combination of this stage of life, but also the toll that typical corporate America is taking on folks.
I was going to ask you that next. Yeah, what are your learnings when you engage with others who are in that position? Would it be the increasing and perhaps unreasonable demands that are on people? Or do you find, I mean, I know for me, I find more often people who went down the wrong path and didn't stop it. And so they want off because this wasn't really ever the passion point for them. Yeah. It's just,
yeah, I mean, that's very much true for me. Very much true for me. I, you know, joined the military to pay for school and, you know, with the intention of using that experience and the education I got from it to build a career. And, you know, from the very beginning, again, I can see it now, but I couldn't see it then. The choices that I made around what I studied and the jobs I went to and the moves that I made over the course of my career, it was all fueled by fear. It was fueled by this terror about living with the instability that I'd been raised with, in terms of having a consistent place to live or having consistent income to provide for basic needs. And so my career was my answer to that. It was my way to not have to struggle. And I didn't know at the time that that was the motivation that was driving the bus. And over the course of a couple of decades, it kept taking me further and further away from the things that I love, the things that I'm passionate about, the stuff that lights me up. And quite candidly, I don't know if I would have jumped off the train had it not been for, I tell people I went bankrupt and that it was mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
Which I think is worse. Bankrupt. I think that's worse. I think that's a far worse form of being broken than just financially just having to that's it. I mean, yeah. I think in our culture, I think we are so conditioned to believe that the bank account equals our value. And yes, we'll go so far as to destroy our spiritual, emotional, and physical being in order to maintain a healthy balance. And I am only discovering, you know, through now the work, right, and engaging with others, that we've all been misguided. We've all been sort of misled, and that it's a lot harder to rebuild, you know, but certainly possible, your spirit, your emotional health, and your physical well-being, than it would be to go out and just start earning money in another way. Yes, you might have to retool the way you live, and yes, you might have to make some concessions if you're used to a certain lifestyle. However, it's all just materialistic good. So
yeah, it's good for you. Quite an identity crisis to go through that.
Yes.
When the way that you typically introduce yourself, the way that you identify is through your role, your company, you know, going to an event after that, or even getting together with friends and meeting someone new and them asking, you know, what do you do and where do you work?
Right.
You know, during the transition time, it's absolutely terrifying. And I had to go through, you know, I think it took a couple of years to determine for myself what my identity was and who I was entirely independent of a job title or working for a specific company.
Right.
And now I'm back in touch again with the skills and gifts that were there that for me weren't coming to life through my corporate roles. I'm back in touch with the inspiration and creativity and the lighter part of myself But it was a scary journey to get there.
Absolutely. It's all a process. Would you say that your passions in life are far more incorporated now in your everyday space, be it in the workspace or just in the personal space? Would you say that you've been able to bring it full circle now?
I think my life in general is far more integrated, that I'm able to take a more holistic look at my life and the aspects of it that give me energy or drain energy. And I'm able to pursue projects and work with clients that I get excited about and who get excited about working with me. And maybe it's because of the type of clients I have or the type of work that I do, but I'm working with people who are also even, you know, CEOs of growth companies that are doing quite well and are seeing their teams and their roles and their companies expand. All of them are deeply grounded in something bigger than themselves. And they show up as authentic, flawed, beautiful human beings. And I think that more than anything has been healing for me. And also what I appreciate the most about the work I do now. And it's a freedom that I didn't feel I had at the time in my previous roles, was to kind of integrate the entirety of my being into my work.
That's fantastic. I absolutely love that. Just being able to align and know that you're attracted to and you're attractive by individuals who share that mindset and share that space with you. That's the whole point.
Yeah. I mean, that's people who want to do good in the world.
That's right.
Like who see their company, their brand, its growth, the opportunities they're providing for their people as an opportunity to make an impact for people in their community, to causes that they care about. And that for me, I find it so fulfilling.
That's awesome. I love this story. I love your story. I think it's one that will resonate with many, and that is the point. Would you say that at this point in your life, you feel that you've been able to become comfortable with the discomfort of the financial part of working for yourself and having to experience the up and down and the not knowing?
No, not at all.
No, I guess you're right. After so many years in corporate paychecks, we'll probably never get used to it.
No, I'm not there yet. Every April, I'm waiting for the bonus check to come in and the stock
right.
to vest.
Of course.
But it goes back to that rebalancing of priorities.
Right.
There is no doubt that I am happier and healthier, and that, you know, the mental, emotional, physical, spiritual bankruptcy, you know, that I've recovered from that.
Yeah.
And there have been opportunities over the last couple of years to move back into an internal role, working with some really wonderful people. And as comfortable as that might have been in some aspects, I haven't been able to bring myself to do that just yet, because I'm prioritizing other aspects of my life more highly than I did, you know, a handful of years ago. And I'm also trusting that doing this work now I'll ultimately end up much further ahead as a complete being.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
Stayed on the other path.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, it goes back to the when you know better, you do better. And it really counts for the way in which we treat ourselves, first and foremost. And when you can recreate your existence and fill the coffers, if you will, and create a richer experience for yourself, that's just so priceless. And you really do understand the value and what that means for you. So bravo to you.
It's so hard to do when you're working 60, 70 hours a week and, you know, just in back-to-back meetings all day long. And the real work begins when you get home at night or on the weekends. But you know, in my case, I was so fried from doing something so many hours a week that I found unfulfilling that I got to a point where my capacity wasn't what I knew it should be. You know, my brain, there were times when I just thought, you know, my brain isn't working. Why can't I think? Why can't I complete this sentence or this thought? Or why can't I finish this project? And, you know, that all of that for me has completely been eliminated. And I think that's what keeps me going through the up and down journey of learning what it is to be an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. is that I see all of these indicators in my life of where things have gotten significantly better. And those are worth something to me.
That's awesome. I love that. It's really a very, it's an ideal dreams and detours kind of scenario when you really think about it, because, you know, your thought of what should be versus what in actuality you needed out of life and out of, you know, your existence and how you needed to integrate all parts of you. You know, it popped up suddenly, but you knew, or at least you had to quickly learn how to address that, confront it. And now it's your bliss in a certain way, because now it takes priority over everything. So I love your story. I really think listeners are going to, again, resonate and find themselves there, and maybe give somebody strength to know that it's okay. And if you've gone out on your own, good for you. This will reaffirm the decision. And if you are thinking about it and your situation looks and feels similarly, you will take the leap for yourself. So that's what we hope for. Yeah.
If you're reaching that burnout and, you know, dragging yourself to work every day. And for me, like wondering what happened to the me I used to be, what happened to my passion, what happened to my excitement, my enthusiasm, my patience. You know, I think we know on a deep level, even if we're not ready to acknowledge it yet, mm-hmm. that something isn't working. And, you know, at the time, what I was telling myself was, I have no other options. There's nothing else I can do. This is the only thing I've ever done. It's the only thing I know. It's what I went to school for. It's what I've spent the last two decades working for. What does it mean that I did all of that and it was for nothing? And that's how it felt at the time. And, you know, instead, I got to a place where I could say it was just a part of the journey. Like, that was my path that led me to this. And maybe all of that was just preparation for what's to come next.
Absolutely. I believe that is always the case, that none of it is wasteful. All of it is useful. And even if it just needs to be repackaged and repurposed, like we're doing now with ourselves, there's absolute value in that. Yeah. So thank you for sharing your story.
I loved
having you on, and I love getting to know you even more than before. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your thoughtful questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to just say thank you to Jessica, and thank you for listening. And if you have any questions, we're going to list in our show notes where you can find Jessica. But please, please let the listeners know if you have social media feeds where they can find you, or...
Yeah, I would say LinkedIn is probably the best source directly from your post. And the website is under revision, but that will be up and available pretty soon.
Excellent. So we'll leave all that in the show notes behind for anyone that would like to reach out and have a conversation with Jessica, or actually, let's face it, hire her, because there is some really amazing work that she's bringing to the table. So it'll be a game changer, no doubt. Well, thank you again for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe, and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.